Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here today for episode number 317. Today, in just a moment, I'll be sharing with you an interview I did with Kathy Benjamin about her book, It's Your Funeral, and it's actually really a fun conversation. And her book is a lot of fun to read, too, which is why I wanted to share it with you, something a little novel and unexpected in our conversation about funeral planning. So stay tuned and take a listen to that. Before we get there, I just want to say thank you to all of my supporters, both new and old, on my page at patreon.com/EOLU. I really appreciate you for stepping up with a contribution every month to help keep this show on the air. And also to let everyone else know that it's now possible to make one annual contribution instead of paying a smaller amount every month. Some people would rather pay upfront one time instead of having a monthly donation come off their credit card. So if you go to my page at patreon.com/EOLU, you can learn all about that. Sign up and join our team, and you'll get some fun bonuses like my monthly end of life news update, and also from time to time, movie reviews my husband and I do about movies that deal with death, dying, and grief. So once again, thank you everyone who have been loyal supporters to me for several years now. I appreciate it so much. So we'll move on now to my interview with Kathy Benjamin. As always, stay tuned afterwards and I'll come back with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Kathy Benjamin. Kathy is a freelance writer whose work has appeared on various sites, including UpRocks and Playboy's The Smoking Jacket. She is also a regular contributor to Cracked.com, and she's the author of Funerals to Die For and the recently released It's Your Funeral, Plan the Celebration of a Lifetime, and that's the book we'll be discussing today. And you can learn more about Kathy at her website, which is kathybenjamin.com, www.kathybenjamin.com. So Kathy, welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I have really enjoyed reading your book after it was sent to me, and that's why I was excited to interview you about it, because this book, It's Your Funeral, is both, it's a really fun and fascinating read. It has great stories in it about funeral traditions and graveside rituals and things. It's lighthearted and entertaining and fun, but at the same time, it's a really helpful workbook for planning a funeral. And I'm so curious how you came about writing two books on funerals.
This is always the fun story to tell. So I just started freelance writing online, and then after a few years, I was approached by Adams Media, and they said, we have this weird idea for a book, and based on your online writings, we think you could be good at bringing it to fruition. And I was like, okay, great. And then they were like, it's about funerals. And I was like, yes, they get me. So that's kind of how the first one came around. And then it happened, you know, funerals was and death was a big interest of mine anyway. So I was really excited about the topic. And then a few years later, I get another email from a different publisher going, hey, we saw you wrote a book about funerals. Do you want to write another one? And I was like, yeah. So it was, you know, no work on my part, unfortunately, getting the idea out there. People came to me and said, we have an idea and you're weird. How about you write it?
So, wow, this is really your niche. But is there anything like that informed your interest in funerals from the past, or just a quirk of yours?
Yeah, it's my origin story with funerals and death, I suppose, is when I was 17, I started having really, really debilitating panic attacks, like the kind where you genuinely think you're dying, call an ambulance, like really on the ground, convinced you're about to die. And, you know, they're horrible. But, you know, as a teenager, I was suddenly pretty much on a daily basis kind of confronting my own mortality, even though I wasn't actually in danger of dying. My brain didn't know that. And being, you know, studious kid I was like, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm terrified of this, but I'm going to learn. If I learn, if I read, if I take college classes on death and mourning and funerals, then I can become like an expert at it and I'll know about it and I'll get an A in death. It'll be fine. that's basically the way I kind of dealt with that own existential fear was just, okay, I'm going to confront it. I'm going to learn about it. And yeah, so by the time I was, it was just happenstance because I hadn't really written anything particularly, I don't think at that point, about death or funerals. It was kind of just this weird thing that I did in my own time. So when I was approached to write something about funerals, that kind of tipped me over the edge into just obsession and learning about them and going to cemeteries and all those things.
Yeah, that was a question I had is how you did research for the book, because it's full of so much information. And so, you know, you obviously spent time working on it. So I was curious about what types of research you did.
Yeah, I'm a reader. So pretty much like books, just lots and lots of books and learning about the history. That's the stuff that really interests me is the history. And then tying that into how we mourn and how we host funerals today. I did talk to a couple of funeral directors, but I didn't want to come at it from a business perspective because I think that kind of takes it in a whole different direction. And then I kind of just talked to people that I know, people around the world, people that I'm close to, like, okay, what do you think about this? It was kind of something that I already talked to people that know that I'm weird and who are weird in the same way about. And so I just kind of got opinions and things that they'd seen. But yeah, a lot of reading mostly.
And so really you were just continuing the work you may have started as a teenager, you know, and coping with your own anxiety, which is, it's so wise of you at that young age to recognize, even though I'm terrified of this, I'm going to dive right into it and learn about it, because that's actually the best thing you could have done, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I make it sound, I suppose, a lot easier than it was. It was hard, you know, when you're terrified of dying, it's hard to sit and take a college class, you know, and just sit there and try not to panic while you're learning about death and you're learning about the history of death. But it was definitely worth it. And I'm glad that I was able to confront it, at least on the level that I was at the time. It's gotten so much easier. I was asked by someone, they were like, okay, so you were really afraid of death, you know, has learning about it helped? And that's an emphatic yes. Like, now I can think about it with no problem. And so if it's something that scares you, I would encourage people to, you know, read my book, definitely, but read and watch. There's great videos and all those things.
Yeah, because I think from my perspective, fear of death is just pervasive in our society right now, and compounded by the fact that we just don't talk about it. And we haven't developed very good systems of approaching it and dealing with it, other than a few college courses here and there. But I will say, I think your book has a great approach, at least to the idea of funerals, because it is lighthearted. It's not a scary book, even though you're dealing with scary topics, and it's not a particularly sad book in a way. I mean, it's very palatable, and I find it really easy to read.
Yeah, I think because obviously I feel what we're doing now isn't working. Because as you say, people don't want to talk about it. They want to avoid thinking about it kind of at all costs. And that just causes so many problems down the line. And it's something we're all going to face, you know, there's no point in ignoring it. And so if we kind of are approaching it as this kind of really mournful, sad thing, which of course death is, no one wants to die. I'm not looking forward to dying, but it's like, okay, I'm alive right now and I need to deal with this. So why don't I make a joke out of it? Or at least talk about it jokingly. And I kind of compare it to how they say, you know, like soldiers in the foxhole and everything. And, you know, you make jokes that maybe people outside of that situation would find inappropriate, but you're doing it to get through this stressful, you know, scary thing. And I think it's the same thing with dealing with our own death or the death of people we love. If you can make jokes, if you can think of it in a lighthearted way, you're going to be able to get through it a lot better.
Yeah. And it just occurred to me how, you know, at certain milestone birthdays, I think particularly maybe age 60 or so, it is somewhat common, you know, to have black decorations and to talk about, oh, you're getting closer to the end now because you're 60, but it's a joke. Everyone's laughing about it and teasing the person who's getting older. But that makes me think your book might be the perfect gift for a celebration like that where everyone is being lighthearted about the topic, because it's a humorous book. I mean, and it comes across as having some good-hearted humor, even though it's very serious in its topic. I mean, and it's a serious attempt to get people to plan their funerals. I don't know if you've heard of that, if people have given it as age 60 birthday presents or not.
I mean, yeah, it's only just come out. So I would hope that in the future, you know, people are thinking about that. Because I honestly, like 40th birthday, I think is great. My husband just turned 40, and the number of jokes I've made since then, because, you know, I'm 2 years younger. So that's like a big, I'm not 40 yet. He's 40. I'm like, oh, yeah. you're so close to death. You know, that kind of thing where it's, you know, the earlier, the better, I suppose. But yeah, when it's those milestone birthdays and you know, Halloween's coming up, I'm like, yeah, let's do Halloween gifts. Just a little weird thing, but it's also serious. Yeah, I think it's not something that's going to offend someone, I don't think, if they actually read the book. They might open a gift and be like, this is weird. But, you know, it's a happy looking book. It's yellow. It's got a happy little skeleton and a little party hat. And it's not like a cruel humor. It's not like an inappropriate humor. It's just, yeah, a lighthearted look at something that is a genuinely important subject that people need to do.
Yeah. And a book that, like, someone might put it on their bookshelf for the moment, but it will still be in the back of their mind that it's there. And then there may be a time when they recognize, like, now I need to read that book.
So. Yeah. Or maybe you like hear, you know, maybe you've looked at kind of what's in it, kind of skimmed it. And then, you know, a few months later, you hear a song that you forgot that you love or something like that. And you're like, oh, this, I would want this played at my funeral, and just take it down and add that to the playlist section, you know, just ideas like that. Maybe you watch a documentary on like cremation and you're like, I really want to be cremated. So I'm going to note that down, all those things. It doesn't have to be done in one sitting. You can kind of take time and build, you know, the same thing, you know, that you would do with your wedding, like just come up with things as they come.
Yeah, exactly. And it really, as I mentioned, it really is a workbook. It has actual pages where you can record things that you want or ideas that you have. And I think that's really wonderful to keep all of that in one place.
Yeah. And I think it's good to keep it in one place too. For definitely for your, you know, when you do pass, it makes it a lot easier if your family members at least know, okay, we get this cool book off the bookshelf and we go through it. And it also has room for things like important passwords or other instructions that people might need when you do die. And it is just one really simple place for them to go and get all that information that they'll need.
Yeah. And Kathy, after all this, the research and studying that you've done, I'd love to hear your opinion about why you feel funerals are important enough to write a book about them.
I think funerals are really important for the people who are left behind. I think that especially over the past 18 months or whatever it's been now, we have realized that when you take away communal grieving, it is hard. It makes losing someone that much worse. So I think having a funeral is very important for the people who are left behind. I think it was important enough to write a book about because funerals are hard enough for the loved ones that you do leave. And I think it's really, I mean, essentially cruel that we kind of are so afraid of thinking about our own death that we're like, you know what, I'm going to kick the can down the road. I'm going to let someone else deal with this. And then you die. And then they're really, really, really sad. And then they have to plan what is these days a $10,000, $15,000 event in what the average would be about 5 days. Mm-hmm. And it's just so much work to put on someone who is that upset. Yeah. And I think as we've seen again over the pandemic, you know, things can happen, things can come up. So having things planned is definitely, it's kind of a safe haven for the people who are left behind. It's a nice thing to do for your loved ones, I think.
Yeah, and I will definitely echo that, because when my mom died, she spent the last 5 years of her life working on plans for her funeral. And I knew she was doing that, but I didn't really know how extensive her work had been until after she died. And she left a notebook for my brother and I. And it had similar pages to, she wrote them herself, but I mean, similar information to what you are having people gather in your book. And including, she had all the speakers she had invited who would speak at her funeral, though some she had crossed out because they actually died before she did. So she had to replace a few of them. And to my surprise, I knew she had prepaid for a funeral, but she already had a video made that we could show, like a life review video. It was already made, already done. I didn't have to gather any photographs or anything. She did everything, including she had brochures made for the funeral that were just lacking the date of death. That's the only thing that had to be added later. And so I was a little blown away that she had gone to all this trouble, and yet it was a tremendous gift, as you're saying, because my brother and I didn't have to stop and try to make these decisions or try to figure out what would she have wanted, what songs would she have liked, what verses would she like read. Neither one of us would have known that, but there it was. She just handed it to us. So I agree with you 100%. It makes a huge difference for the survivors.
Yeah. And she, woman after my own heart, your mom, that is, it is exactly what you're saying too. She knew what songs she wants. She knew what verses she wants. She knew what she wanted included in that video. And so I bet that her funeral service felt really personal to her. One of the things that I did learn when I was talking to people, because ironically, I haven't been to very many funerals in my life. So I kind of talked to people who had been to more and who'd been to ones for very important people in their lives. And one of the things that kind of kept coming up is, like, I went to this funeral and I didn't even recognize the person they were talking about, or it was in a church and I'd never heard them talk about church before in their life. Like, it didn't feel right for them. And I think that's another aspect of planning it yourself, is that you can make sure that your funeral is actually going to reflect you. Because even if your loved ones know you really well, in that kind of a stressful situation, are they really going to remember what your favorite song is or things like that?
It's so true. And when I look back at it, each one of us knows different things about our loved ones. We've had different relationships and shared different things with them. And so it would be hard for any one person to plan a very complete picture of their loved one, a complete funeral, without getting input from lots of other people to do that. So as you said, it's ideal when we can plan our own and include all those special little touches, that will end up being meaningful to the people who attend.
For sure.
So I wanted to talk a little bit more about the book and some of the chapters and sections that you included, because you do a really good job of going through step by step. So it makes it very logical for a person who wants to plan their funeral to sort of start at the beginning and think it through. And one section I wanted to bring up, you write about venue and choosing a venue, which is something I hadn't thought about very much, because I'm just used to people having traditional funerals at a funeral home or maybe a church. But you wrote about various venues that people have considered, which is really creative. And so I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, about some of the venues you've heard of.
Yeah, venue will all depend on what you want done with your body, obviously, because if you want a full body burial in like a big coffin, and you ask, the local pub if they'll let your coffin and body go, they might be like, no. But if you're cremated, or if we're talking a memorial service where there's no remains at all, obviously then options are almost limitless at that point. But yeah, so definitely if you're doing full body, you're probably limited to a religious space or a funeral home. But I think especially as we get, one, it's full body burial is falling out of favor. you just have so many more options. We're also becoming a more secular society, and so you may not have a house of worship that will mean anything to you. Funeral homes might be a little too depressing in some ways. What venues mean something to you in your life? I just had, my parents just went to a memorial for one of their golf buddies, and it was at the golf course. I believe his cremains were there, but you know, all these people turned out, they were outside and there were speakers and things. And you know, they knew him through golf. He golfed virtually every day. This was his golf club. And so it was really nice to have that ceremony there and have it, be the thing that was associated with him at this point in his life. I love in the book, I cover, the pubs and bars where people have their drinking hole that they love, and or they worked there for a really long time, and so they have their memorial / funeral in this place where it's like Cheers, you know. Didn't they have a wedding in Cheers? Instead, you have a funeral in there.
Yeah. Well, I love that idea of encouraging people to be really creative, because that's the very best way to express your uniqueness of who you are. And there are probably lots of venues that are possible, like you said, especially if you just have cremated remains or no remains present at the ceremony. And I think that actually, it's nice thinking outside of the box of the funeral home box or the place of worship box in order to create something truly creative, but that allows your guests in attendance to truly feel as if you're there at the same time.
Yeah. And it's just another example of the planning ahead, because if you're trying to throw together a funeral, you know, within a week, a lot of people are going to go for the obvious options. And maybe if you call up, you know, the local museum, they're going to go, no, you can't have a memorial here. What are you talking about? But if you're alive and you call and you're like, hey, just, you know, down the line, would this thing be possible? And what would the rules be? And are there any permits and things like that? Then you can get it all planned out and get it paid for now, so it'll be cheaper in the long run. It just, planning ahead gives you so many more options than just the kind of, you know, very standard basics that we've, over the past basically 150 years, just come to accept as the only options in a way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it does make sense, even in terms of COVID, like we've mentioned before, when families are not necessarily able to get together, but if their loved one has created a funeral plan and they have, they've already listed what's important to them or what really matters to them, you might be able to come up with some alternative events, even online, that would still fall in line with the preferences of your loved one.
Yeah, it's really strange. I don't know, strange, funny. It's hard to find the right word when you're talking about something like COVID. But when I wrote my first book, I wrote it in 2012, and it has like a future of funerals section. And one of the things that it talks about is how they were live streaming funerals now. How weird is that? People were live streaming. It was like this weird thing that people were doing. And now, especially over the past year, that's become pretty standard, because you can't travel. You can't all get into a place. And so COVID is really weirdly kind of sped up some of these things that were happening anyway. And I think in COVID's not positive, but in a lot of ways it's positive that it has sped these things up, because now by making like Zoom funerals more normal, you can have people who maybe couldn't have traveled feel like they're a part of it. All of that, as we eventually hopefully get on the other side of this, and you know, you can have regular funerals, people won't think it's weird to Zoom into a funeral to watch it.
Yeah, so true. So true. I think that's one of the unexpected blessings in a way of COVID, is that it's just helped us expand our mindset of what's possible and what we can do when there's a need and when we have to get creative. Mm-hmm. And one thing that you have written about is the idea of, I like this, you talked about having a funeral dream team of people to play specific roles for your funeral and picking those people in advance. So would you talk a little bit about that, about any tips for choosing a funeral dream team?
Yeah, with the dream team, we're talking about things like the pallbearers and the people giving the eulogy, et cetera. Like the, you know, it's so easy to compare it to a wedding. It's the wedding party of your funeral, your funeral party. And those people, I think it's especially important to ask ahead of time because, again, to spring that on someone, to be like, hey, in 5 days, can you get up with a speech that you've written that has to be perfect and sum up this loved one of yours who's passed, you know, perfectly. And you have to be able to stand in front of people to do it. So I think it's important to, one, ask people and make sure that they're willing to do these things, but also just kind of think about not even necessarily the people who are closest to you, but the people who are actually going to be able to take on those roles. You obviously don't want someone to do your eulogy who has incredible stage fright, because that's not fair to them when they're sad and just to, in general, and you want someone to be able to do you justice. So I think that's definitely one of those things that you want to cover all bases, because yeah, even more so than like when we're talking a venue or something, when we're talking actual people and their actual emotions and their time, it's good to plan that. For sure.
Yeah. And it makes sense if you were one of the people chosen to do a eulogy and you were chosen far in advance, that would stay on the back of your mind and you might be gathering little stories and moments that you've had with this person and even special conversations that you had with them that would be appropriate to include.
Yeah, and what they don't want and all of that. Like, you can even talk with the person that you would be eulogizing and just be like, hey, there's this story that I think would be great. And they'd be like, oh, I'm so embarrassed by that story. I don't want, you know, just touch base on things.
Yeah, exactly. And you also write about choosing a theme for a funeral. And that was something new in my mind, because I haven't been to a funeral that I would say had any sort of theme. But, well, you talked about the funeral at a golf course, but I really like this idea of having a theme. It's not the right thing for everyone, but there's some people you can see who would be perfect for the Hell's Angels funeral or so what other themes have you heard of that are interesting?
Yeah, they kind of do crop up every now and then. They're kind of weird. Of looking at, there was this show, this TLC reality show, which was very short-lived. It was only like half a season, I think, called Best Funeral Ever. And it's this funeral home in Dallas. And that's kind of their thing, is they put on these really over-the-top themed funerals. And so, like, the list of ones they've done, bowling, breakfast. I think, have you seen a funeral on breakfast? That's fascinating. Olympics, candy, Hollywood horror. I kind of like the horror thing, like a Halloween-themed funeral. I don't know if it's, like, too on point, but that would be amazing. But it was really funny, because then I was coming up with, obviously, like, ones of my own. And it just showed how out of like pop culture and coolness I am with, you know, Down with the Kids kind of thing. Cause I was like, oh yeah, like Harry Potter. And they were like, could we do something a bit, you know, that kids are still into? I was like, K-pop? They like, kids like K-pop, right? Pokemon?
Yeah, it's just a whole new way of thinking about it. But I mean, I think we all know someone who has passion for a certain topic or a certain area of life, and that it would totally make sense to choose that as a theme. I remember, I think I heard of one funeral where everyone wore the color orange to the funeral because it was their loved one's favorite color, but that's a simple way of doing it. But
there's a famous thing. I don't think I included it in the book because I'm not actually sure if you can buy them anymore, but there was a period of time where, because if you've ever met a Kiss fan, a fan of the band Kiss, they are very dedicated fans. And they Kiss, the actual band, like, used to sell an official casket that was all, the whole casket was Kiss themed. And so, like, the real Kiss Army people got buried in one of those. Like, okay, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
I love it.
And so along those same lines, you write about eulogy and writing a eulogy. And one thing I wondered is, do you encourage people to write their own eulogy, or more to take notes for the person giving the eulogy to have ideas of what they might say?
I think there's benefits both ways. I I think adding your own stories or spin to it, or at least addressing the things that you feel are most important about yourself and sum up your life. You know, you're the only one who's lived your whole life, you know, as yourself. So you're going to have a different take on it than anyone who, you know, no matter how close you are to them, who you've left behind. So I think it's good to be able to at least get some of your input in there with whoever you've picked to choose the eulogy. And then just maybe ask other people as well, like, what do you think of when you think of me? Because our ideas of who we are going to be so different. It's exactly what you're talking about with, you know, everyone else trying to figure out who a person was. But like, you know, we spend our whole lives trying to figure out who we are. And then in this one little speech, we're like trying to sum it all up. So I think, you know, I think it's huge. I think it's really big, and you want it to reflect you. So, you know, if you're a good writer, if you're a control freak like I am, if you want to write the whole thing, then yeah, that's great, because then you get exactly what you want. But I think it'd be also nice to hear what other people think about you as a person as well.
Yeah. Do you have tips for what a good eulogy should cover? Like what to include in a good eulogy?
Yeah, I think, ironically, I would use the same thing, the same tips that I give to high schoolers when I am mentoring them on their college essay, is that you can tell a lot more in a small story than you can as kind of an overview. So you can hit really important themes about your life and who you were as a person by telling a small story that happened in the course of an hour, rather than going, and then I did this job, and then I did this job, and then I had this child, and then I lived here. So I think the more personal, the more intimate you can get on that, the more it's going to hit people, rather than like a list of your accomplishments, because you're more than the sum of your accomplishments. You're a person. And I think those really personal stories get there a lot better.
Oh, that's such a great tip, because you're right. Those intimate stories are really evocative and really connect us emotionally a lot better than just a list of facts and details would.
Yeah, and you figure if people are at your funeral, like, they kind of know what job you had, and they know who your next of kin are and all those things. It's not like they're going to go, oh, I didn't know that. Like, yeah, but they're not, maybe not going to know this nice little story about this thing you did for someone.
Yeah, I really like that. And I'm thinking that would actually be a eulogy everyone would enjoy listening to and be fascinated by, because they might learn something new about the person that they didn't know before.
Yeah.
And then you have one little section of the book called You Can't Take It With You. However, you point out that a lot of people do take a lot of things with them that they're buried with, which I found that really fascinating too. And I, for one thing, you just mentioned these days, a lot of people want to be buried with their cell phones, which somehow that almost seems really sad to me, because we spend so much of our lives connected to them. But then maybe that's like a prized possession for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where we just have to kind of put technology into kind of a historic framework. Like, people used to be buried with letters all the time, like letters from their loved ones and things like that. And what is your cell phone other than where you get all your texts and where you get your phone calls and, you know, where you check your emails and all those things. So it really is almost just all of your letters, if we still wrote letters. It's all those things that loved ones have said to you. Sure, it's off and you're in the ground, but that's still what it means. And the other thing with cell phones, which I actually find really, really beautiful, is that a lot of people will continue paying their loved one's cell phone bill so that they can call their number and hear, like, if they have a voice message, then they're hearing their loved one's voice. And then they can leave them a message and just be like, hey, you know, your favorite team won the Super Bowl or anything, you know, I miss you. And even though maybe at first that sounds kind of odd, think of how cathartic that would be to like call the person's number and hear their voice and just pour out your heart about how sad you are. And at the same time, like, you know that cell phone is in the coffin or the urn or wherever. You can't be cremated with your cell phone, but you can put it in after. It really is beautiful in a way.
Yeah, I can see that now, because I do remember someone telling me that how devastated he was when he realized one day that he could no longer remember what his mother's voice sounded like and how tragic that was for him. But to be, as you're saying, to be able to just dial up and listen to the voice message would be would be very sweet and beautiful in that moment.
Yeah, the voice thing, that was a common thing from people I talked to. You know, I say everyone just start a podcast and then everyone will have everyone's loved one's voice. But a lot of people don't. They don't have a recording. And that's exactly what happens. You suddenly, you're like, I can't hear their voice in my head anymore. Even for people who don't continue paying for a phone bill, like if you have a voice message that was left on your phone by your loved one and then you don't delete it. And I've talked to people where it's the most banal message in the world from like their dad. And it's just like, oh, hey, you know, sorry, I missed you. Call me back. And they will save that for forever. You know, they still have it just so that they have that voice.
Hmm. Yeah, I can totally see that. Are there other interesting things that people have chosen to take with them to be buried with that you can fill us in on?
Oh, completely. I mean, and at the end of the day, name a thing and someone's probably taken it with them because, you know, we put a lot of stock in our possessions and what we surround ourselves with and what we really love. So you've got, you know, golfers who take golf clubs, fishermen who take fishing poles with them. You've got, Sandra West is the ultimate, example. She was very rich, so she could do whatever she wanted. And she was buried in Texas in her classic car. So they made this giant hole in the ground in an actual cemetery and sat her in the car and they buried her with her car. I can't remember exactly. It was a Ferrari. That's it. Yeah, 1964 Ferrari. And then they had to encase the whole thing in cement so people wouldn't steal it. But hey, if you got the money, you can do it. I like one of the people I have in the book is Tony Curtis and his coffin. He died in 2010 and his coffin just says, I literally have to read it because there's so much. It's a model of his car, his Navy medals, his grandson's baby shoes, some stones, a DVD of his favorite films, his iPhone, packets of Splenda, a Percocet tablet, and his dog's ashes. And there was more. I didn't have room to include everything. So it's really just anything you could take, you know, jewelry and locks of hair and just, I mean, anything at all.
And it's actually a historical custom, right, through the past, because didn't the Egyptians, I'm not sure, but bury people with possessions, and that has been a common thing in the ancient past?
Oh, yeah, even more so. Technically, they're called grave goods. And one of the history, like one of the ways we understand the history of humans, of actual humanity, is when they find really ancient graves, like we're talking 100,000 years ago, with grave goods in them, they know that this was a ritualized burial. There was some reasoning behind it. It literally takes what it is to be human. And every time they find an older and older grave like this, it kind of pushes that back. Like, yeah, okay, we came up with religion and language, and we figured out how to mourn people. And one of the ways, like I put in my book, is they found one of someone who was buried with antlers. And it's, you know, it's very obvious to the archaeologist that he wasn't just thrown in a hole with some antlers. This was a very ritualized thing. It's like, okay, what did the antlers mean? Why did he need the antlers? Obviously, they mean something. I would say it's not only, you know, something that we've done historically, it's something we've done from the beginning. It's like a really important part of being human to be like, okay, you're gone, but what are you taking with you?
Yeah, it's really beautiful. I mean, it really is like a sign of civilization in a way that we love each other and we care about each other and care about each other's disposition after we die and want to make that beautiful in every way.
Exactly. You're no longer just getting rid of a body because the body is smelly and becoming unsafe. You're getting rid of it in this really ritualized way, in a way that means something to you.
Yeah. And that's one of the parts of the book that I really enjoyed. You cover a lot of unique funeral traditions from around the world. And I found that really fascinating to read the stories that you tell. So this is what I'm trying to give listeners out there, this picture of how interesting your book is and just so full of information. But would you tell us a few of the stories about some of the traditions that you learned about from around the world?
Yeah, and I'll just start off by saying if I get a fact wrong, I apologize. And also, obviously, you can't sum up societies and religions in a few words, and people do different things. Anyway, just be on the safe side. But one of the ones that I thought was really fascinating was in Japan, cremation is pretty much, you know, if you die in Japan, you're pretty much getting cremated. And one of the things that often happens is that after the body's been cremated, the loved ones, will take chopsticks and will pick up the bones and put the bones into the urn. And, you know, on the one hand, at first that's like, whoa, that would be intense. But it's like also really beautiful. I love that one. I like the, well, I don't know if I like Zoroastrianism, which is still found a bit in India, Iran, places like that. They have something called the Towers of Silence. And they take bodies and they put them on top of these towers. And they are basically eaten by the birds. And then the bones and everything are put in the middle after a certain amount of time. It's actually harder to do now because a lot of the towers and silences were in kind of small towns, and now they're in the middle of what are big cities, and people don't like looking out onto the towers of silence. And also there's some sort of problem with the vultures, and all the vultures are dying. So there's not enough vultures now, but it's just, it's a really interesting kind of just how different religions come up with completely different ways of mourning, but they're all just trying to deal with the same thing, which is the sadness around death, and they have a body to get rid of.
Yeah. And you wrote about, the origin of the wake, and where that tradition or the, the wake and the viewing. I don't know if those are the same thing, viewing the body and the wake. I guess those are different things, but those two origins.
Yeah. It's one of those things where they could be the same thing, or they could be one after the other, or you could only have one or the other. The main difference basically is the viewing is kind of literally what it says on the tin. You go, and if it's a full body burial, you know, they're laid out, usually embalmed, and the family is there, and you're kind of really there to say, hey, I'm sorry to the family, and, you know, see the body one last time. Whereas the wake, oftentimes the body these days, oftentimes the remains will not even be there, and it'll be essentially more like a little party, where, you know, we essentially use alcohol, and wakes have used alcohol from the beginning. And I'm talking, you know, thousands of years ago, to basically say, this is the time we're going to lubricate our emotions. And while we may be kind of dour and just crying a bit at the funeral, this is when we're going to use a chemical to make ourselves okay for mourning and crying and being a little out there.
And as far as the viewing goes, is there something about that, like a need to verify that this person actually died? Like, is there a need to actually see the body to help people really come to terms with the reality of the death?
Yeah, it's from what I've read from psychologists, a lot of them say that that is the moment when you get it. Basically, you know, death is such a weird concept in our heads that when you actually see the dead body, you are like, okay, this person has passed, and it almost kickstarts your grieving process. And so while I'm actually not a huge fan of open caskets, just personally, I can definitely understand how on a psychological level, that's going to be a really important moment for people. Just to be like, you know, it's very different seeing, for example, an urn and going, okay, the person is dead and their remains are in this urn versus this is the person laid out in front of me.
Yeah, it does seem like part of just shifting our reality in order to grasp the fact that I will not see this physical body again. This physical form is gone now, and I won't see it again. That is one of the challenges of accepting a death.
Yeah, I think one of the things I should be careful because I have some very apparently strong opinions around embalming, which came out in my book a little bit. I was asked by a funeral director about that. But I also think it's interesting that with the viewing, at least since the 1860s, we tend to embalm people. And so one of the things that almost does for the living is convince them that death doesn't change anything. Because if you're looking at a dead body and it looks the same or, you know, pretty close, you know, it's not caving in, it doesn't smell, you know, their face isn't ashen. You as a living person can kind of go, see, death isn't really that scary. Nothing changes. It's fine. So, yeah, so I think the viewing kind of, we've kind of made the viewing into that sort of thing as a calming mechanism for ourselves.
Hmm. Yeah, versus if you were in India, say, and your loved one's body were on a funeral pyre, I mean, you mm-hmm. would really have to face the reality that death has changed everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So it's so fascinating to think about it, but it seems in some ways like we can really trace the history of mankind and kind of study our own evolution in a way by using funerals as the lens that we look at mankind through.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I 100% agree. And I think it's really fascinating to do that because I think people tend to think, even people from like the 1800s were like, oh, they were so long ago. They were so different than us. But really, when you look at it, you've got 100,000 years of people trying to come to terms with the same emotion, which is grief. And grief is a really horrible emotion to deal with. And so when you look back through the ages and you go, okay, well, oh, they built giant pyramids. And okay, well, they did a Viking funeral is not really a thing. So I was going to say a Viking funeral, but you know, they buried people at sea or whatever they did. It at the end of the day, even if it sounds weird to us, it was the same drive of, okay, this person we love is gone and this is how we're dealing with it. And it might look weird. What we do now is going to look weird to other generations. But for us, it's what we've accepted as the way of which we're supposed to grieve. Funerals go through fads just like everything else, and they will change in the future. And yeah, but right now we're like, okay, this is how we feel better being sad.
Hmm. And that's interesting because one thing that over, say, the last decade or so for me that I have found interesting and somewhat comforting is when I travel to visit cemeteries in various places. And sometimes they're not famous cemeteries. It's just a small town cemetery somewhere. But just walking through a cemetery, I don't know, it's very interesting to me because sometimes I will see like a lot of graves of children that came from, say, the time of the Spanish flu, you know, a little over 100 years ago. And it's a powerful reminder that everything we're experiencing now, it's not new, as you were saying. It's not something different. Like people have grieved and mourned and experienced these times of terrible loss in the past as well. Do you like to visit cemeteries?
Oh, love it. Yeah, absolutely love it. I think you kind of get, I mean, it depends on what kind of cemetery you're talking about. But if we're talking about, you know, the cemeteries that were built kind of the late 1800s that are laid out to be beautiful, to be garden cemeteries that have trees and that have these really beautiful artistic stones, you get the art and you get the history and you get just kind of a beautiful nature walk all into one. I think and people tend to not go to cemeteries unless they have to be there. So you're on your own kind of thing. It's like a really contemplative, beautiful place. I think more people should go to them, definitely, because it's just amazing. And as you say, like, if you look at the ages and sometimes they'll say the cause of death, it does make you feel a lot better about kind of when we live because, yeah, there are, you know, when you're walking around and everyone is younger than you and you're only in your 30s, you're like, okay, you know, we've done some amazing things as humans. Go us.
Yeah, that's really true. And you start to see like the breadth of human suffering and loss that's happened all through time. And so to become even more grateful for everything that we have right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's, when you look at graveyards, it's like, that's everyone who's ever lived except people who are alive right now. And it's going to be everyone who's alive right now. And it's kind of amazing that we have this thing that connects every single one of us.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. You know, any human around the planet we could look at has experienced loss and grief and will die one day. And, you know, that is our humanity, the basis of it right there.
Yeah, and it's something that we go, okay, let's not think about it.
Yeah, doesn't that seem sad? Yes. Like, let's not think or talk about the one thing that makes us human that we all have in common together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the one thing also that could make us appreciate just being alive all the more, just the fact that, wow, I made it to this age and so many people don't. Like, I'm grateful I'm here.
Yeah, it is strange. It does kind of do exactly what you're saying, the bringing together and the feeling grateful, but it's because it's kind of scary and creepy and weird. We don't do it. And I say we, a lot of countries, a lot of cultures, a lot of religions do actually think about death, but in the West kind of Christian tradition, we definitely have not been doing that for at least 100 years now.
Yeah, for sure. And I think books like yours are, I mean, I hope that it's going to make an inroad and help people get more comfortable. That's the reason I do this podcast, is just because I want people to hear two people sitting around just talking about death and being totally comfortable and even being able to laugh and to be fascinated and interested in it.
Yeah, I think the death positive movement that's kind of coming up, I think the younger generation, I think it's just gotten to a point where we're like, okay, this isn't working. You know, I'm not enjoying these funerals. No one is happy. You know, this funeral isn't doing anything for me. You see that kind of in people embracing the celebration of life as opposed to a traditional style funeral, the wearing of the orange, the no wearing black, the only wearing bright colors. I think we really are in a transitional period right now with funerals, where we, especially with millennials who are kind of caught in between this, okay, you know, the boomer generation is getting older and these are our parents. And it's like, okay, we're going to have to deal with all that. And then you also have a younger generation who's willing to embrace talking about death and these kind of taboo things a little bit more. So I'm hoping that there's kind of a sea change happening right now.
And I kind of feel that COVID has maybe pushed that change, partly because everyone recognizes, as you were saying at the beginning, that we need funerals. And so the alternative of saying, let's just never have funerals again, we'll do away with that ritual, that hasn't worked for anyone. And so I think we're re-embracing the value of having a ritual after someone dies, and that maybe that was just the spark that we needed now to apply our creativity and let's change it all. Let's do it differently, but let's keep doing it.
Yeah. And it definitely took that, that kind of thing that we've perfected of, we will never think about death. We will put sick people in the hospital and then we'll let the funeral homes handle everything. And we'll, you know, we will never have to ever, ever, ever think about it. It took that away from us, because especially early in the pandemic, the thing I always think about was the refrigerated trucks that were in New York City, and people lost their minds. They were like, how can you do this? Basically, how can you put death right in front of us? And it's like, okay, we're doing something that needs to be done logistically, but it's like, oh no, I can see a refrigerated truck and I know there's dead people in there and you are putting this right in front of my face and I can't deal with it. But I think now it's been going on so long that people are kind of accepting, okay, we do have to talk about it. We do have to talk about death.
Yes, exactly. And so people are going to need someone like you and your book to guide them through these conversations. People who, you know, have freaked out and are still a little bit scared, but know they need to think about it and talk about it. It's just wonderful that that your book is there to be available to people to read and to get some guidance, because I would think the average person doesn't have the slightest idea how to go about planning for a funeral, and having something like your book that walks them through it step by step is really helpful.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope people who get it, obviously I would love people to buy it, but I hope that if you do get it, you actually do fill it out. You know, it doesn't just sit on your shelf and you do use it. And you said, you know, having conversations, that's the other thing. I hope it doesn't stop at the book. My book is great, but it's not the be all end all. There will be extra research. There will be extra things you need to do. And I hope that people talk about it with their family members as well. And the book is kind of just a starting point for that.
Yeah. Well, Kathy, I'm curious to know, if I can ask this, if you've planned your own funeral and any details of that you could share with us.
Yeah, I actually, weirdly enough, am not a really big fan of having like everyone come to one place for a funeral. I kind of like the idea of I have something written that I would like sent to everyone, kind of just saying things to them from me. And I have a playlist of just three songs that are all kind of sad that I like. And I would kind of hope that people would just, wherever they are, just sit for a little bit and read what I've written and listen to the songs and kind of reflect on me as a person. Part of that is I've lived like four drastically different places across the world. So getting everyone together in one place would be really, really difficult. But yeah, I think, you know, something, reading my writing and listening to songs and thinking about me is kind of what I want people to do.
I love that idea. It's kind of the deconstructed funeral in a way of, you know, but to know that everyone who cares about you is sharing, they're reading the same things and listening to the same music. I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah. I think it allows people to kind of mourn in their own way as well, as opposed to, you know, having to feel like people are watching you. I'm a writer, so I know a lot of introverts. So they probably wanted to stay home anyway.
Yeah, so true. That's very interesting. Well, Kathy, tell us where listeners can get your book and how they can connect with you.
You can get my book, hopefully anywhere good books are sold. Obviously, it is on Amazon. If you're from another country, I know it's on the European and UK Amazon, things like that. It is other places besides Amazon. If you go to Quirk's website or just search the title of the book, It's Your Funeral by Kathy Benjamin, you'll find a million other places, Books A Million, things like that. And you can find me, best place to reach out to me is on Twitter, which is just at Kathy Benjamin, my full name. And yeah, I will get back to people. I love to talk to people. Yeah.
Well, and I seriously encourage listeners to get this book. And again, I do think it would make a nice gift if you can do it in the right way for the right person on their birthdays, but just something each one of us should probably be working on and filling out as we go. So It's Your Funeral, Plan the Celebration of a Lifetime. So Kathy, thank you so much for joining me today and talking about your book and also for just sharing with us all of this information.
Thank you for having me. It's so much fun.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you and hope the book sells really well.
Thank you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Kathy Benjamin. I really like her step-by-step approach to funeral planning, and particularly because you can break it down into components. And maybe you don't care about a theme or a particular venue for your funeral, but there might be other things that do matter to you, like the eulogy or music for your funeral ceremony or the manner of disposition for your body after you die. So you can use her book to focus in on those areas that are important to you, and you can also use it as a workbook to write down your thoughts and ideas. It's something you can share with your loved ones and let them know where they can find the information, or you could copy it from there into one file if you wanted, so that you could also give that to your family members to read. As I suggested to Kathy, though, I actually think this book is kind of a fun gift for someone younger, probably not someone who is actually facing a terminal illness, who has to get really serious about their end of life plans in a short amount of time, but someone younger who has a long time, hopefully, to think about funeral plans might benefit from having the book on the shelf as just a little reminder from time to time to take a look at it and to start thinking about it. So I hope you'll check out the book. It's actually really fun and interesting to read. I really enjoyed it. So if you enjoy the content I share here on End of Life University Podcast, I hope you'll tell other people about it. Let them know how much you enjoy listening in and make a suggestion for them, or even show them how to listen on the podcast app on their phone. You can also help out the podcast by subscribing wherever you happen to listen and then leaving a rating and review. That helps the podcast rise up in the rankings so that people who are searching for this type of content are able to find it more easily. Remember, I'll be back next week with another new topic. So until then, keep in mind that we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of this life that you're able to experience. Bye-bye.